Welcome to Moneyline. This is Matt McCall. Thanks for joining me here this week. Another big show ahead of us. Some topics that we must discuss. The big question we're hearing on Wall Street right now, is the bull market over? You're going to get my answer to that very, very quickly from now. Also, no more brokerage fees. It seems like every broker out there is waiving fees to trade stocks and ETFs. That's a big, big story. And WeWork. We must touch on WeWork.
The buck starts here. Moneyline with Matt McCall.
All right, let's dive into that first topic. And, you know, this is a question I've been getting from a lot of people in the office, out of the office, wherever I go. Is this bull market over? And an easy answer to that is, yeah, sure, it's been, you know, going for 10 years now. It's going to end at some point. But realistically, I'm going to tell you that it's nowhere near over. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And not only are we not close to being over, this bull market still has one very big move to the upside in the next 12 to 18 months that you do not want to miss. A good colleague of mine, Steve Sugarud from Stansberry Research, he refers to this as the melt-up. And that's occurred in so many different markets over the last 100 years, actually over 100 years, going all the way back to the tulip mania back in Holland back in the day. What happens is it's a phenomenon that when you have something that's going well, a bullish market, before it ends, you have a huge run-up of that last group of doubters that were waiting to get into the market. And they kept saying, well, I'm waiting for a pullback, I'm waiting for a pullback. Finally, 10 years later, they say, I have to get in. I've missed out too much. And when they come over and there's no more buyers left because we're all in the market, that's when we have that pullback, which, you know, I still believe this bull market has another 10 years left in it. And it sounds crazy and I can't get into it today, but I have many charts and numbers proving why that's a possibility and a high probability possibility. That being said, we're going to have pullbacks in the next 10 years. We're going to have bear markets. We're going to have recessions. It's normal. It's typical. We need them. It's part of the economic cycle. All that being said, we're due for a big, big rally to the upside, in my opinion, in what we call that melt-up, because everybody's piling into stocks at one time. That FOMO, the fear of missing out, takes over rationality, and it pushes stocks higher. We saw it going back to the, really, let's call it 82 to 2000 bull market. Obviously, there were some bear markets in there, but that was a long-term 18-year trend bull market. In the last 14 months before we topped out in early 2000, you saw the small cap index, the Russell 2000, rally over 40%. That's a big move for a basket of 2,000 stocks. Think about some of the big winners that were in there. Stocks up several hundred percent. These are 5, 6, 7 baggers in a matter of 14 months. I think something similar, if not even at a greater magnitude, could be upon us right down the market. So, you know, let's take a step back and look before we look even further out. You know, what's kind of going on right now and what's driving this market? You know, the first 3 months, believe it or not, were the best first three months of the year for the S&P since 1997. It sure doesn't feel like it because when you turn on the news, everything's so negative, especially this week. There's a lot of negativity flying around, and the markets themselves are pulling back from basically all-time highs or very near all-time highs. And then we'd look back to last year where the fourth quarter was terrible. You know, the S&P was down about 19%. I mean, just on the verge of a bear market last year in the fourth quarter. Will it be the fourth quarter again like we had last year? No, I don't think so. And as a matter of fact, since that low was basically a Christmas Eve debacle, I remember, you know, right before Christmas, nobody wants to see the market breaking down. But since that low, we have rallied about 25% to the high in the S&P 500. And if we take a look back at where the S&P closed last year on October 1st, it closed at 2940. This year, we closed at 2924. So you basically wipe out that fourth quarter pullback and you wipe out that big gains we had, but we're pretty much at the same level. If you said to me, I had an opportunity to buy into the market in the situation we had October 1 last year versus October 1 this year, I mean, hindsight's 20/20, but just looking at the facts, today is a much better buying opportunity than last year. I was bullish last year as well, don't get me wrong, but it's a much better opportunity. Remember last year in the fourth quarter, the Fed was anticipating raising interest rates this year, raising interest rates in 2019. Not only did they not raise, we've been cutting interest rates. And there's probably going to be more cuts going forward after the PMI number that we had just earlier this week. So to me, we're setting up with so many positives. All the ducks in a row, as they say. You know, the upside potential here is much higher than any downside. So, you know, let's take a look back at how we historically do in a fourth quarter. Believe it or not, it is the strongest quarter of all quarters for the S&P. On average, a gain of 4.3%. And stocks are up in a fourth quarter 80% of the time. 4 out of 5 years, they are up. All the other three quarters, 66% of the time, 2 out of 3. That's a big difference. So we do have concerns. And when I say we, I say me and everybody else out there, that we had the PMI, which measures manufacturing here in this country, for September came in at 47.8. Below 50 means contraction, means we're not expanding the manufacturing sector. It's the second straight quarter we've been below 50, so second straight quarter of contraction. It's also the lowest number we've had since June 2009. So we're looking at just over a decade. A lot of things have to do with this, but two we need to keep in mind. One's obviously the trade issue we're having in China that is slowing down some manufacturing. Number two is GM, General Motors. They've been shut down for over 2 weeks now. If you're not producing cars, it is going to hurt the manufacturing number here in this country. They didn't mention a number, but I got to tell you, it had something to do with that number. I know it. There's just no way that it didn't have something to do with it. So it could be a bit skewed because the moment that issue with the union gets settled, you will see those stocks move higher. You know, now let's take a look at, I think, some other concerns. Slowing growth in the U.S. globally, that's PMI. We have a strong U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar index broke out to a multi-year high this week, and that hurts some of these large corporations that export goods. Because when you export goods, it costs companies outside of the country more to buy it because our dollar is worth more and their currency is worth less. So it hurts some of the big names. We also have the trade with China going back and forth. And then we have D.C. The stories coming out of their impeachment. I mean, back and forth, it's a circus. It's truly a circus on every side of the aisle. I don't care what side you're on. It's a circus. But now let's look at positives. Low interest rates, low inflation, low unemployment. We have the Fed on our side this year versus fighting us. We have really decent valuations, in my opinion. We have corporate profits set to hit all-time highs next year. And D.C. is actually a positive as well. Because if D.C. can settle down and go from absolute manic to just slightly manic, that helps the market as well. And where is the upside potential here? We have the Fed, they start cutting interest rates more aggressively, market explodes higher. We have any type of deal with China and trade, market explodes higher. So to me, a lot of negative stuff's baked in. We could both drift a little lower in October, sure. But you want to be in stocks by mid-October and October, because I believe November, December, you're going to see a massive rally into the end of the year. All we need is one of these catalysts to propel that. So to answer my original question, which I asked myself, is the bull market over? No. Topic number two is fascinating to me because it's something that I kind of saw 20 years ago. My first job out of college was a stockbroker at Charles Schwab in Colorado. And back then, you know, it was all online trading. It wasn't all. Schwab was basically the pioneer of online trading. Yeah, you know, E-Trade is around. There's a bunch of other ones popping up at the time. But Schwab is definitely still the leader. And there was talk back then, I remember, of the execs about eventually getting to a time where there's zero commissions for buying and selling stocks. And we're there. A few days ago, Interactive Brokers was the first one to come out of the four major online brokerage firms and said, no more commissions. Then Charles Schwab came out, said, no more commissions. About 7 or 8 hours later, TD Ameritrade came out and said, no more commissions. So no more commissions when you want to buy and sell stock or ETFs. For options, most will still charge a per contract price, but those have been slashed as well. So that is great. But there's a couple underlying stories here. One, it's absolutely crushing the stocks. All four are getting hit. And the reason for that is obviously it takes away some revenue. But what people are overlooking is the fact that most of these companies don't get a big part of their business, the revenue, from trading commissions. Schwab derives about 90% of its net revenue from net interest income and asset management fees. TD Ameritrade and E-Trade, a little more exposed to the commissions, but it's not a big part. And really what's going to happen, in my opinion, is you take away maybe that 10% or so you get from trade commissions at Schwab, and it's going to increase the other 90%. Because I think you're going to get more money coming their way, which that net revenue comes from the net interest income. So basically, they're making interest on your deposits, paying you less, and that net in between is where they're getting a lot of their income from. And that was a talk 20 years ago, to get more assets under management. The other part of that 90% of net revenue is asset management. So you pay them to manage their assets. So to me, this short-term hiccup that we're seeing will be overridden by the pickup in the larger portion of that's really creating the net revenue right now. We knew it was going to happen. So why did this happen? Well, you know, the fee war started back in 2013 when they started going, back and forth. One lowered a few dollars, another one lowered a couple of dollars, down, eventually to zero, as we're seeing this week. One thing could be an app called Robinhood. I'm sure a lot of younger people have heard about this. You can buy and sell stocks commission-free. It's a private company, but in its latest round when it raised money in the middle of this year, it had a valuation of $7.6 billion. I mean, that's a real valuation. That's what they call a unicorn out in Silicon Valley. A very big unicorn, as a matter of fact. So they're coming at $7.6 billion. I think that's scaring them. They don't want to lose the young millennials. The problem a lot of these firms have, and when I used to speak a lot of conferences, TD Ameritrade was always at the conferences. And they would try to give speeches to the younger crowd, to bring in colleges. You know, a lot of times they'd have college-age kids there, special track for them. They'd come in, a couple hundred people. And I remember I always wanted to speak to the younger people because I felt like I could connect with them. And I was also younger than most speakers. And really kind of talk to them in a real way. Where TD Ameritrade always had these people come up, these older-looking guys. They couldn't connect, first of all, if they wanted to. And talking about investing long-term, the same spiel and same pitch they're giving to a 60-year-old. Just couldn't connect. They've tried everything. So they're deathly afraid of not getting the next generation of investors. And millennials are really slow to invest already, which I think is a major, major disservice to themselves. I don't care how much you hate Wall Street. I could show you so many numbers that the earlier you start, the massive amounts more of money you're going to have when you retire, or you retire 10 years earlier. So if there's any millennials out there or anybody, even young Gen Xers that have been debating about getting the market, I'll tell you one thing. Max out your 401k immediately. You'll never see that money. Put it away. That will be your nest egg. That will be retirement. It lowers your taxable income. I mean, it's one of the greatest things in the world that people do not take advantage of. You know, I max mine out, every year. You want to do that. I mean, it's just one of the smartest things you'll ever do, because what's going to happen is you're going to turn around one day, look at this statement and be like, wow. And you know what? If you didn't do that for 5 years, let's say, and you have $50,000, $100,000 in there, you would ask yourself, where is that $50,000 to $100,000? What did I spend it on? You couldn't name it. Maybe a little fancier car, maybe a little nicer clothes, maybe more eating out, drinking, whatever it might be. Listen, it's a big difference. I suggest you do it. As a matter of fact, I'm going to do an entire show coming up just on that, on the best way to plan for retirement, because I think people overlook it too many times and there's too much bad information out there. But off topic, let's get back to this. You know, Robinhood is scaring the traditional online brokerage firms into no fees, which is great for all of us. I love it. So if you're one of the members of my services, then you don't need as much money when you start investing. Because sometimes if you're a small amount, those commissions will eat into your potential profit. If you don't have any commissions, you want to buy $1,000 worth of XYZ stock or $500 worth of XYZ stock, you buy $500 worth. It's fantastic. I love it. I think it's a great move long-term for the brokerage firms as well. They're getting decimated. I don't catch falling knights, but at some point they're going to be great buys as well. So no more brokerage fees. It's good for everybody. It's a win-win-win situation. You'll love to see that. It should be making us smile. The last topic I want to touch on, I'll keep it a little shorter, because I've talked about the WeWork IPO in the past, and I don't want to dwell on it and be negative by any means, but boy, this is what they called, excuse my French, an absolute shit show. I mean, what's going on at WeWork is an example of why you must do your research. Why you just can't buy into a stock because you like the name, because you heard of it, because the CEO has nice long hair and talks a good game when he's on TV. No, those are exact reasons not to buy into a company. So WeWork had announced they're going to IPO, and then people started looking into them and have since pulled off their IPO. And I honestly think the company's in a boatload of trouble. And I said this right when they announced. I said it on this podcast. I would never buy WeWork. I'd stay so far away from it because I saw that company from the inside out. It wasn't necessarily boots on the ground research for my investing, but I've had offices in WeWork. I had one in Bryant Park in New York City in Manhattan. I had one in Soho in Manhattan. I had one in Nashville. So I've seen three very different places, I will say too, and obviously two very different cities. But when I first started, my initial office was in Soho. And boy, they knew what they were doing. They're on point. Employees were happy. Things were great. It was full of entrepreneurs. We had great meetings. It was just a really great environment. And that's what the company, I believe, was initially built on. But what happens? Success sometimes can ruin people. Or Adam Neumann, the CEO, founder, ex-CEO, I should say, founder, ousted, co-founder, some people can only manage a small business and it gets bigger and it's just, you can't handle it. You see it all the time. Whatever the reason, I don't want to talk down on the guy because I don't know him personally. He wasn't fit for the job and things went awry. He did some shady things too that are coming out. There's a Business Insider story that I was reading this week talking about basically alcohol-fueled meetings and some weird stuff going on. And yeah, I mean, I'm not going to get into it, but there's some X-rated stuff they talked about. But these were former and current employees. And again, I saw the insight. You know, one day I remember walking to WeWork in Nashville and there's no more meat. And they used to have lunch sometime because one day he just happened to say he doesn't want meat because he thinks it's killing the environment. All the cows, you know, passing gas. Boom, boom, no more meat. I mean, nobody, like even employees, if they were traveling and it was on a company card, no more meat. Then the stories come out that he was eating meat. So, you know, very hypocritical. But that's the kind of stuff, if you're going to be CEO of a multi-billion dollar company, a unicorn that wants to go public and be scrutinized in the public eye, you can't do that. So again, this didn't take really detective work, but it took some boots on the ground and thinking outside the box. And to me, WeWork is a great example of IPOs and new companies that get a lot of press because it sounds good, it sells advertisements, but in reality, it's, again, excuse my French, a shit company that you want to stay nowhere near. So what I did is I looked at all the IPOs in the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ over the last 12 months. You'll be extremely surprised to know there's over 350 IPOs on the New York Stock Exchange, NYSE, and the NASDAQ in the last year. You never heard of probably 98% of them. But some of the good performers here, I just want to talk about them. Beyond Meat, we all know about. That's been a great one. I don't like the company. I wouldn't buy it here. I think it's a true fad. I don't short stocks ever, really. I don't say I never do. I have in the past, but I don't now. But if I had an opportunity to short something, it would be Beyond Meat. I think a stock is garbage. But here's a couple other ones I bet you never heard of. Soliton, symbol S-O-L-L-Y, up over 120%. Medical device company. Kodiak Sciences, symbol K-O-D, biotech company, up 110%. Palomar Holdings, P-L-M-R. Again, probably never heard of this. It's an insurance company. Look at a chart. It's fantastic. It's up over 100% just since going public in April. Stone Company, S-T-N-E. It doesn't deal anything with stones, but it's a weird name, I know. But this it's actually a technology company, up 85%. Yeti, we all know Yetis, right? I've never bought one because I think they're the most overpriced things in the world. But like a Yeti cooler, the Yeti things people walk around with. Down south, I lived in Nashville, it was like a religion down there. Everybody had their Yetis that they put their beer in. You know, people drink a lot of beer down there. I do not. So you had Yeti coolers everywhere, up 80%. Anaplan, Simple Plan, PLAN, software company, up 80%. My point is, there's so much money to be made in IPOs, and these companies I just mentioned, besides Yeti and Beyond Meat, you probably never heard of the other ones, but they're real companies. They're good companies. They're companies that make you money. Sure, it won't be fun to talk about at the bar saying I own shares of WeWork, but who the heck cares? Are the people at the bar you're bragging to going to pay your bills? I don't think so. If they do, tell them to call me. I'll hang out with them if they want to pay my bills. My point is, there are so many great opportunities out there, but we have to look beyond traditional ways of buying stock. We have to think outside the box. What we do here with my investment opportunities, even more so with my early stage newsletter, we do boots on the ground. We go to conferences. We're actually going to Portugal for a week in November to the largest tech conference in the world, taking one of my guys with me, and we will be there. He'll be in one track, I'll be in the other, all day taking notes, interviewing people, trying to find out the next trends in technology before anybody else. That is how you make money in the market, thinking outside the box and boots on the ground. It takes a lot of work. It's not hard. I love doing it, but it takes work. So again, WeWork, stay far away from it. There's other IPOs out there that are rocking and rolling, so much so, I'm trying to convince my CEO to put together an IPO product just with these names I mentioned. Companies like this that we can invest in. We do the research. We share it with you. But again, if you want to see what we're doing now, we just launched a new newsletter called Canvas Cash Weekly last week. You can check us out at McCallMoneyWire.com. Again, McCallMoneyWire.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Matthew McCall. Shoot some questions at us. You can also shoot out any comments. Tell me how bad I am, how good I am, whatever you want. It doesn't matter. We'll take it all and we'll respond as quickly as we can. But again, thanks for listening. This is Matt McCall, and that's been The Moneyline.
Thanks for listening to Moneyline with Matt McCall. To find more information, head over to McCallMoneyWire.com. That's McCallMoneyWire.com.